Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from over 30 years combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group and Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks. We are live at commandcontrolpower.com, the first Tuesday of every month, where new episodes are posted weekly. Thanks for listening. This episode is sponsored by Kalos Consulting. For more information, go to kalosconsultinginc.com. What do you think of those announcements, or should we save it for the show?
I know you've been traveling, but all this was sort of leaked and pre-announced, so not many surprises.
Yeah, true. Yeah, exactly.
So we are recording this several hours after the Apple announcement. It's Tuesday afternoon on September 12th. So you'll probably be listening to this about a week later. If anything comes out in the next 7 days, pardon our ignorance.
So yeah, iPhone 10 is coming. The first thing I take issue with is it's all screen. They say that, you know, that's the marketing. It's all screen. You know, it's not all screen. There's that silly notch at the top. And I just find that so annoying. I find that really unfortunate, inelegant, you know, but it is what it is. I mean, I understand why it's there, and I understand they probably would have loved to have eliminated that if at all possible, but it's not quite all screen. And so I don't know. I'm sort of feeling like this iPhone 10, I mean, feature-wise, it seems great. It's nice to have a big screen. I think Face ID is a, you know, perfectly fine alternative to Touch ID. At first, it seemed like, well, you know, you're gonna be able to hack it, and it's not as secure and whatever. But Apple says it's just as secure, or if not more secure. So they've addressed that, and it seems, you know, at least as elegant as you could expect facial unlock to work versus a fingerprint unlock. You know, lack of a home button seems to be tolerable. It's just that silly notch at the top bothers me, and especially like when they demoed video, full screen, HD, you know, 4K video. You know, you turn the phone sideways and the video, there's just a little cutaway on the left side.
You ask for so much, Joe. What do you think? You're living in Blade Runner?
I know. I mean, it's just so unfortunate that it's there. That's I can't help but feel like it's unfortunate that it's there. And, you know, Apple says it's edge-to-edge screen. I've seen Android phones, and some of them really truly are edge-to-edge. Like, the screen is kind of like right to the edge, and there's it's a curved display or whatever. And I'm not saying like we need that. I'm just saying that it's not. It's great to have more screen. It's just too bad about that silly notch.
There's our show title: false advertising. iPhone X.
I mean, again,
you're saying iPhone 10. Now, I was folding laundry with and I had the sound on, but it wasn't. I guess I missed that. Did actually Phil say iPhone 10?
Yeah, he did. And you know, that's the funny thing. That's the only thing that didn't leak was the pronunciation of is it iPhone X or is it iPhone 10? I guess we're gonna have to tune in on Tuesday to find out. And you know, yeah, they said 10. Of course, up until now, anything with an X has always been 10 from sure. Apple's perspective. Apple has been known to change their pattern on things. You know, if it suited them to say X, they would have said X, but no, it is 10. And of course, it is kind of funny because they released the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10. So it's like, where's the 9? You know, it's just weird that there's a gap there.
Price point wise, it's not that bad as everybody suspected it to be. They, you know, some people were prognosticating that it would be well over $1,000, and I believe it comes in at what, $1,156 for the 256 gig phone. So that doesn't seem that bad to me. And if you do it out, you know, 24 months and do the installment plan, it's like, you know, $56 a month. Yeah. If in fact that's what you need.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, it starts at $999, which was predicted by Gruber, I think, months ago. And like you said, you know, you step up from 64 to 256. That's a pretty big jump, almost 200 gigs more. You know, it's another like $150. So it doesn't seem that exorbitant. You know, and like you said, even better, I don't know if it's most people, but anyway, a lot of people now are either on a plan with their carrier or through the Apple upgrade program, you know, paying monthly for it. And so it's not a huge difference to go from, you know, 64 to 256 or to go from the 8 to the 10.
This leap from 64 gig, like you mentioned, to 256 gigabytes, that seems like Apple's just really not playing fair. You know, I really always loved, you know, with the Macintosh line when they would have good, better, and best. If there was 128 gig, probably purchase the 128 versus the 256. 64 seems really meager and doesn't even seem like you can consider it if you're going to buy an iPhone 8 or an iPhone 10. My only apprehension with this iPhone 10, there's so many new things on it. It's almost like when I initially bought the iPhone 6 Plus, that being a first gen phone, you know, they had that whole bend gate issue. And I later developed about 12 days ago, Murphy's Law, you know, right in the cusp of Apple announcing a new iPhone, right. I developed something called iPhone touch disease. So I'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But that would be my apprehension, you know, with this iPhone 10 is that I'm sure there's going to be some design changes along the way once this hits the market and starts to get distributed and they get a lot of feedback.
Right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. I do look at this as like a, you know, sort of quantum leap in form factor, you know, the device being all screen or mostly screen, having the screen take up that much screen real estate is new. And it's an OLED screen, which is brand new for Apple. There's no home button. That's brand new for Apple. There's just so many changes. So yeah, Face ID, I mean, it's just, you know, go down the list. It's a lot of changes. So I think you're probably right to be somewhat cautious about it. Although one thing I do like about it that's I find tempting is it does have the better camera system in the smaller form factor, which is exactly what I want. You know, I don't want to carry the plus size phone to get the better camera if I can avoid it. You know, it is compelling in that sense, despite the notch, as I mentioned earlier. It's not a deal breaker for me, the lack of that full screen. I'm tempted, aside from that caution like you're expressing there, which is just that it's a first gen product. So, you know, best maybe wait.
So what are you carrying right now?
I carry the iPhone 7 in black with, I think I have the 256 size.
And you bought that within the last 12 months, I believe, right?
It came out about 12 months ago, I think. So I got it like, you know, a couple months after it came out.
That would make sense, right?
Yeah, it definitely was within the last 12 months, exactly.
Yeah, and up until 12 days ago, I had an iPhone 6 Plus through luck at being at the Apple Store. But having to reach into my pocket, I now have an iPhone 6S Plus.
What about Animojis? Those are pretty cool.
You know, I may have wandered away from the TV. You know, they started to lose me on the iPhone X. And like I said, I was folding laundry. So it's one of my side jobs here at the world headquarters of MacWorks.
Right, exactly. Somebody's got to do it. So Animojis, unfortunately, another thing that did leak, they leverage basically the front-facing camera system for, you know, the Face ID uses to read your facial expressions using that true depth camera. The emojis, there's, I think, a dozen emojis that will take on whatever expressions, you know, you want. So you can smile, you can frown, and, you know, the emojis will be animated to match your facial expression. So it looks like there's a really well-done feature. It's very Apple, adding a new feature for the Face ID, you know, adding new hardware to enable Face ID allows them to then use that hardware for other purposes. So it's a pretty cool feature. It's, you know, it's kind of gimmicky, but it's, I think people are really going to like it.
I see Max Headroom in my future, maybe.
Max, what is that?
Oh, Joe, you're such a young child.
Oh my God.
All right, we'll put that in the show notes. Anything else interest you? Apple TV, anything else you're going to buy? You're going to buy the new watch, spend $400, get cellular, anything like
exactly.
that?
Exactly. I mean, I don't see a real compelling reason to go cellular with the watch. I mean, it's definitely an obvious feature. It's really nice to have, but I don't think I personally need it. So I don't think I'll spend the money on that. A new faster watch would be nice, but again, I don't think I strictly speaking need it. So I think I'll probably wait till my watch fails and then hope that I've waited long enough to get a, you know, price drop on the current models or, you know, another new model if I can wait long enough on the watch. But I am due for new Apple TV. So I am definitely excited about the new Apple TV with 4K. That's, you know, clearly been a missing feature until now. So, and you know, the hardware improvements are welcome that support the 4K. So overall, the interface should be faster.
You got to buy a new piece of hardware for that though, right? It's kind of comical, you know, that they're demoing something that's 4K and a lot of people are watching it on their 720p TVs or whatever. So it's,
well, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I just have like a Dell monitor as my TV screen, you know, I have a small place and we don't need a big screen. So I just have a monitor there that I use as a monitor, but also obviously as a TV. And so I don't think it supports 4K. But
no, I would imagine, you know, a lot of people, you know, at least maybe 50 or 60% of the people that might get this don't even have a 4K TV. Apple's really late to the party on this. But at the same time, what I found kind of comical was Eddie Q standing up and the split picture there. Well, you see how the colors look really good on this side? And like, yeah, you know, it's like 4K, you know, I got to have that demo through. I'm watching it through a TV that can't show it. And they're probably broadcasting. I don't know if that was a high def signal, but maybe their broadcast couldn't even render 4K.
That's a good question. I know in the theater, they did say they had a 4K, you know, amazing new Dolby projector installed in the Steve Jobs Theater. And so for the first time, they could basically show 4K content and show just how great it's going to be, you know, to the live audience. But your point, I mean, I'm watching it on an angle on my MacBook screen. And, it, you know, it's like, who knows? I mean, they have to clearly like highlight the differences, or it would just look like you wouldn't be able to tell the benefit.
Getting back to the watch for a moment, that's one of the few Apple products that I wear every single day and absolutely love it. And I have a first gen watch, and I do a little bit of running. And that's always a real kind of pain in the neck for me, is to put my iPhone 6 Plus on an armband and run with that. So I think just for convenience sake alone, I'm going to have to do this. They didn't mention whether you could actually stream podcasts. I know they were talking about how it can stream through the Apple Music ecosystem. And I wasn't really clear on whether you could actually stream your own songs, you know, your own library. I'm thinking that might be using Music Match. I don't know if you could, or it's just strictly Apple Music, you know, because I normally, believe it or not, run to podcasts. That's how exciting my life is.
Yeah, it's a good question. I imagine any apps can leverage cellular on the phone should be able to leverage it on the watch, I would think, at least eventually.
There's another $400 extracted out of my pocket.
It does sound would be useful, though, to, you know, to your point about running. I mean, that's exactly the use case, or swimming or something like that, where you just don't want to have a phone with you.
To our listeners who are listening to this a week later, we apologize. This is all old news, and you're probably sick of people talking about it by now, but we had to get our licks in.
That's right.
Murphy's Law. Leading up to this event 12 days ago, I had read about iPhone 6S touch disease. I guess the 6 didn't develop it, but the 6S, because it had that flexing issue, supposedly the connector at the top of the screen, which is where the connection point is with a digitizer, or lose its contact with the logic board. And what you get is you get almost like white noise right across the top of the phone. There were moments this thing would fail, and then it would kind of go away, and then it would fail again. So it would sort of be in and out. It's within 30 minutes. Sometimes I'd pick it up and it would do it. Sometimes it wouldn't. And so it was completely untenable. I mean, I couldn't conduct my business with the phone at all in the current condition that it was. So I knew I had to go down to the Apple store. And so they have a out of warranty program where normally to get a digitizer front panel replaced, it's $349. Because Apple recognized this problem, it's $149 for the replacement unit. And of course, they don't fix it. They just give you a new one and you're on your way. But the other interesting thing was, you know, how many times were somebody's telling you that the iPhone's doing things on its own? I've been hacked because my iPhone is texting people, or it's opening up applications. I wish I had taken another video with another phone of this, but it was really remarkable where I would be able to just put this down on a surface and literally an application would open, something would launch, it would close, and it looked like someone was controlling the phone remotely. You know, I'll be very careful not to roll my eyes next time I get one of those calls. Maybe connect the dots and say, well, you know, maybe, you know, you've got some bending issues with your phone or a problem with your digitizer. So I went down to the local store, met with a guy, and was able to reproduce the issue really easily. Anytime I would put it into a reboot mode and then it would come back up immediately, you get the white noise across the top and it would sort of like flicker down and come back up. It's a very odd thing to see in person. And he's like, yeah, we gotta get you another one. So, you know, I didn't tell him, you know, I knew about this. I just had him lead me down the path. And he said, it's $149. And if you want, you could maybe try to, he says, I'm telling you this unofficially, but you could maybe take the phone and kind of like bend it here at the top, you know, skate by for a little while until you get a new phone. And it was just, like I said, it was not usable. So I said, no, I need one. So he calls down and they bring one up from downstairs. And as he's unpacking it, he looks at the serial number and he said, yeah, we have a parts allocation problem. So we're going to have to give you a 6S Plus for the same price. So I was really surprised at how much nicer the 6S Plus was. It's faster because it had a faster chip in it than the 6 Plus. So I was never able to take advantage of the 3D touch. And I had always been wanting for that. So the 6S was the first introduction of that. So I'm really enjoying that for the maybe the limited time that I'll hang on to this phone. So now I'm kind of in a quandary. I mean, I need to get an iPhone 8 maybe. I don't know. I've got a brand new 6S Plus. So.
Well, the nice thing is, you know, now that it is a brand new phone, it's in great condition. You could sell it in great condition and recoup some of the expense of getting a new phone. So you get, you know, more than your $150 back, hopefully, you know.
It's actually not from Gazelle. I mean, Amazon could give you a little bit more in a gift certificate. But now, because the new phones were announced, it's just a little over $200 you can get for it. So,
okay. Yeah, but at least you recoup the $150 that you spent and then a little bit more and put it toward the new phone. To your point about the S model, this was the first series, the last like three phones, where I actually upgraded from, I didn't skip a generation. Up until now, I had been skipping generations most of the time. I went from the 6 Plus to the 6S when the 6S came out. And I noticed the same thing as you're mentioning. It is a lot nicer. I don't know what it is. It just was like much smoother, much more responsive. You know, I was having issues where it just seemed like a little bit slow on the 6 Plus. And it seemed like the hardware wasn't quite there, keeping up with the software and the big screen and rendering all those pixels. So downgrading, you know, back to the regular size phone, moreover, getting the S generation really was a significant upgrade for me when that one came out. And then, of course, when the 7 came out, I do again to upgrade. I do agree that the S was a really compelling product. So they skipped the S this time. They went from 7 to 8, the obvious upgrade. The 10 is obviously the step up, wild card sort of new thing. I think the 8 would be a nice upgrade from the 6S even. I mean, that's you're still skipping ahead two generations. So I think that's a great way to be going.
So we both have late 2016 13-inch MacBook Pros. Since we're talking about Apple products, I just wanted to do a little mini rant about how I really dislike this MacBook Pro. Hmm. And what really made it stand out was when they did the refresh on the MacBook Pros in 2017, I had read and I didn't experience it firsthand, or I may have looked at it in the store, but I didn't really notice a big difference. But I recently onboarded one for a client. They did dampen the keyboard enough where the keyboard is a lot more palatable than the late 2016. And you and I have remarked about this before in the past privately, how clicky the keyboard is. And you just seem like a real rube, you know, if you're in a quiet office and you're just clicking away.
Definitely.
And it either sounds like you're just like banging on the keys or you're just some nudnik. I hate it for that. The other thing that recently started to happen to me is I'll set up the computer on the desk to do its nightly backups. I'm done with work for the day. I have it open and I have it plugged in. On more than one occasion, the USB-C connector for the power has walked out of the port. Hmm. Now, I don't think it's mysteriously walked out of the port. It just hasn't been all the way home. Maybe a 32nd of an inch, maybe a 16th of an inch out. A couple of times I've woken up in the morning and come back to a dead MacBook Pro because the power adapter. I mean, there's absolutely no excuse for that. They had this fantastic solution that they were using for years with the MagSafe. And for me, of all people, Joe, to endure this power issue, it's not good.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say. And my one last thing that I really despise about this is I skimped on the RAM. I only got 8 gigs of RAM. You know, maybe there'd be a refresh that was for me that maybe had, you know, a MagSafe ports, the return of the MagSafe or something like that. And I really regret that. I'm noticing not even using Parallels. That seems to run okay, you know, even with the 8 gigs of RAM. Parallels has managed the memory allocation just fine. But things were just like mail will hang. And I'll get the spinning beach ball and all of a sudden it'll come back to me. And I don't think it's anything else but just RAM constrained. I just hate this computer. Yeah. And ironically, I bought AppleCare because we were coming to the end of our first year with it, right? Yeah, I would imagine you being Mr. Fancy Pants, you bought the 16 gigs of RAM. And I'm sure you bought AppleCare right in the beginning, right, Joe?
I did.
Yeah. Me, Mr. Low Rent, I'm saving where I can. So I just recently bought AppleCare because I figured if I did sell it sometime in the future, I'm sure none of our listeners want to buy it now. You know, at least it's going to travel with some AppleCare. And the other thing that we got kind of the short shrift on buying late 2016's first guys to the party was we couldn't buy AppleCare Plus on this.
Right.
Even a year, almost a year later, I can't buy AppleCare Plus. So I had to reach out to Apple directly. I can't buy one of the packages that they sell online through like a third-party retailer like B&H. I had to buy it directly from Apple. And of course, they're glad to take your money in any fashion or form. So that's what I did to get it upgraded. But I just really regret. I mean, there's probably nothing else I could have gotten to replace this right now. And so I'm just biding my time and just hoping for better products in the future.
It's a first-gen product. Even the revision that came out this year, like you said, they fixed the keys. You know, that was like a major issue.
Right.
I mean, I haven't noticed a difference myself. I just haven't set up enough of them to have like just noticed that. But I remember reading about that they did change something about it to address the complaint about not the feeling, but just the sound of the keyboard.
Yes.
But I think also the feeling, you know, feels better as well, supposedly. But also the main thing for me was the sound. And, you know, that's a perfect example of a Gen 1 product form factor kind of refresh getting getting a slight improvement in the Gen 2 of that product. So not to mention, I don't know, this product model name is just terrible. MacBook Pro 13-inch, late 2016, 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports. That's the name of my computer. I mean, that's just awkward. I don't think we'll ever see MagSafe coming back. There's no elegant way to kind of bring that back. There's third-party solutions, you know, that you can plug in into the USB-C port and get the effect of MagSafe back. But I don't see Apple doing that just because of the fact that you can charge from any of the USB 3 or Thunderbolt 3 ports. I don't think that they can tack MagSafe onto that. Bring it back as a dedicated charging port, I guess. But I don't think they would do that in light of the benefits.
Well, they have patented an adapter. Include the patent in our show notes. It looks like it's got a little bit smaller profile than the Belkin solution, which kind of really hangs off the side. Right. So it looks like Apple might release something that might be an adapter sometime in the future, which would be preferred for me. The rechecking of making sure the power is in, there's just no excuse for that. It's just, you know, I realize USB-C is here to stay, and I'm fine. You know, I've got a backpack full of dongles, and that's not an issue anymore. Really regret first gen. So stay away from the iPhone X 10.
10. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's unfortunate. Here, yeah. Hey, Jerry, I want to tell you about a company I've been working with recently who's actually now a sponsor of our podcast. And listeners, if you are looking for a candidate, if you want to hire someone for your Apple consulting practice, this company is for you. Kalos Consulting is a specialty recruiter. The Kalos team has over 20 years of combined experience in recruiting, and they made a big splash in the IT space 18 months ago by becoming the only recruiter specializing in Apple's FileMaker software. It has since placed 17 developers in full-time roles, mostly with companies in the FileMaker Business Alliance. Good news travels fast, and Kalos was asked to extend its services to members of the Apple Consultants Network. Their goal is to assist you in growing your business by finding the people you need to make that a reality. Kalos takes time to find out what your ideal candidates look like and then goes and finds them. The majority of the time, these end up being passive candidates, people open to new opportunities, but who aren't actively applying to jobs and who never would have found your job without Kalos guiding them there. Surprisingly, statistics have shown that around 90% of the best candidates are not actively looking for new jobs. Working with Kalos, you won't need to post on job boards. You won't need to sift through lots of resumes of people who aren't a fit. And you won't need to get your hopes up when you think you found a match, only to find out that candidate wants too much money, isn't a geographical fit, or has some other undisclosed deal breaker. Kalos prides itself on both its client needs analysis and candidate vetting process. Kalos will have an in-depth discussion to learn about your hiring needs and your company culture. Then you can get back to running your business, and before long, Kalos will start sending you the kind of candidates you would actually want to hire. If your company specializes in Apple IT and you need help growing your team, or you're an Apple consultant who wants to learn about new opportunities, give Kalos a call for a free consultation.
So Joe, since you and I last chatted, and there's been a lot of media attention on this, and there's been a lot of podcasters talking about it, of course, CrashPlan is moving out of the home market, and that had always been my go-to favorite compared to Backblaze, and I know Backblaze is certainly a nice product, but it was their ability to go back in time. So Backblaze, I believe, only keeps the last 30 days of data. And I had an issue where sometime inadvertently some information was deleted from my computer. It was probably beyond 30 days. And it was nowhere else but on Backblaze, because I was using Backblaze at the time. That was it for me. That was the death sentence. And I abandoned them and moved all my products onto CrashPlan and never looked back. But I was, of course, using the home plan. I'm a little bit disappointed. CrashPlan is offering people to upgrade. And if you upgrade to the business plan, that seems fair. And it's on a per device basis. And I realized that, you know, you're going to be spending a lot more money for backup. But when backup is cheap, usually it's very unreliable. So I have no problem giving CrashPlan more money, but they're capping it out at 5 terabytes per device. So that's a new restriction, or maybe that 5 terabyte limit has always been there. The other downside with Backblaze, of course, is that if a drive falls off the network, let's say you've got a connected USB drive to your server and you have Backblaze doing the server backup and this external drive that you're using, which carries important data, if Backblaze doesn't see it, I believe after 30 days, just drops it off of the backup. So that's another friction point for me in terms of moving back over to Backblaze. Okay. Joe, were you aware of the CrashPlan 5 terabyte limit, even with the business plan? And were you aware of the fact that Backblaze, if it doesn't see a drive anymore, it just stops backing it up and it doesn't keep a backup copy of it on their server?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I was aware of the Backblaze issue where if an external drive that you've included in the backup is disconnected for whatever reason, the client will get an email basically from Backblaze saying, drive missing after 14 days. And yeah, the real trouble there is like if you don't reconnect it soon, you just lose the backup of that drive. And hopefully you haven't lost the drive, but if you then lose the drive, you're kind of screwed and your backup's gone. And I mean, it's kind of silly because the drive that you're backing up, the external drive that you're including in your backup, could fail and therefore unmount, and therefore Backblaze will not see it. After 14 days, I think you get that warning about the missing drive. After 30 days goes by, it will no longer be included in your backup on Backblaze's server. So you essentially, the data is deleted from the backup. If your external hard drive dies and you don't deal with it within 30 days, maybe you don't notice, maybe the client is just slow to like inform you as the consultant or whatever, you've lost your backup too. That just seems like a really kind of bad loophole.
And it's, of course, good mention of why all our clients should be on Watchman monitoring, because, of course, it'll give us an alert. But we do have clients out there, mostly residential, but I do have business clients like this, too, that are still time and materials. And we all know how they are, where they just ignore the message or it goes to their spam folder or they just don't pay attention to it. And then all of a sudden, they're in some sort of situation where they need to recover data, and Backblaze deleted the backup of that drive, and that drive failed on them sometime within the year, and they're out of luck.
That may be their first warning that something's wrong is, 14 days later, they get the alert from Backblaze. I'm pretty sure it's after 14 days because I've seen that, I've seen that email forwarded to me by clients saying, what do I do? I'm like, let me take a look. And usually the drive is just unplugged. But like I said, the drive could fail and they don't notice it right away. And then they get this email and then maybe you're out of time to remedy it. That also in this market where, my clients are sometimes away for weeks at a time. So you might be away from your computer for weeks at a time, a couple of weeks, let's say. Backblaze sees that as like the drive is disconnected. You could actually have your backup removed if you just simply haven't backed up in 30 days. There's a couple edge cases with Backblaze, and I think that's one of the ways that they keep their pricing so low. So I kind of get the trade-off, but it definitely, it should be looked at as a secondary backup to like your primary, Time Machine backup. That's at least my policy is like Time Machine should always be the primary backup, backing everything up, including any external drives, whether it's to another external drive or a time capsule or, a NAS that supports Time Machine over the network. That's your primary backup. And then Backblaze would be considered a secondary backup. Some clients say like, well, why do I need a time capsule? Or why do I need an external drive for Time Machine when I can just pay $5 a month for Backblaze? We try to make that case that Backblaze is your secondary backup. You haven't got a primary backup yet. So we need to remedy that.
Well, you need belt and suspenders.
Yes, exactly.
And a lot can change in a year. I have a little bit of time on my crash plan. And of course, I think Apple's going to expand their backup capabilities. But if you're looking for something that you really can rely on that's not going to drop your data after 14 or 30 days, you just have to pay a little bit more money and go with the Crash Plan Business Edition. And it's on a per device basis. And I think you get what you pay for. So once my subscriptions lapse, I'm not going to jump on the wagon early because, like I said, I think prices might soften over time. Probably not. I will definitely still stay with Crash Plan, but just move to the business plan.
Probably not a bad policy for having the unlimited versioning. Essentially, there's no default policy to remove data ever. You just have all your backups going back for forever, essentially. If you want that level of protection, that's the way to do it. I would definitely say Crash Plan is the alternative to Backblaze in that sense. But yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that they're getting out of that consumer space. I'm not sure what to do. I run a CrashPlan backup server for clients like you do, and we've talked about this before as well, that they're no longer going to support a Mac as the host machine. And that's coming up maybe in 6 months or something like that. I recently renewed my maintenance and, you know, upgraded a little bit. And it's getting to the point where I'm not sure I want to maintain that for clients anymore. But I think that means to get the same benefits, we'd probably have to use CrashPlan Central for those reasons you mentioned, you know, for the essentially unlimited versioning. I've also considered just like recommending Backblaze, and it would be essentially managed by the client and monitored by us using Watchman, and therefore getting similar benefits to running our own CrashPlan server without any of the maintenance headache for us. I'd rather just have a company kind of do that for us, be able to monitor it ourselves using Watchman. And that's, I think, probably a good compromise. And it's probably the direction I'll head. But again, like you said, we have some time before that comes into effect. So,
and there might be a possibility that we could virtualize a Linux installation or something along those lines and run it still on our local networks, but it might make it a more compelling point to sell to a client. Well, you know, you can certainly use CrashPlan, or you could use our CrashPlan server that we host here in our office. Price point wise, it actually might make sense for a client to go with you. Whereas prior to CrashPlan discontinuing the home plan, it was a real race to the bottom. I mean, you know, like you said, how can you beat $5 a month? But now that that's gone away, it may make your local CrashPlan server more compelling. It just can't run on a Mac OS, but I mean, that's not the end of the world.
We could virtualize it possibly and run a server in Linux or something like that. It is a good alternative to have.
Just as easy to administrate, and the overhead of actually running it isn't that great. You know, once the data has been uploaded, it really hums along. And I've been running, I know you've been running yours a little bit longer than I have, but I think I've been out like 4 or 5 years now with it, and it's been pretty free of any, you know, maintenance or any problems. It just works. I like the company and I want to support them. Backblaze is growing and they are adding new services. Of course, their B2 backup is a great product. I do some of my Synology backups using B2 for Backblaze and enjoy the price point.
Yeah, I definitely would continue to support Backblaze as well as CrashPlan. Probably the top two in the Mac space. Are there any others that you're aware of, Jerry? I can't think of any offhand that I'd, you know, recommend considering to clients.
There's Mozy and Carbonite, but both of those I've had pretty bad experiences with. I haven't installed them on client machines, but I've worked on client machines that had out-of-date Mozy pieces of software, and they just don't really seem too dialed into the Mac platform.
Right. No, I completely agree with that. And I've had nothing but, you know, bad experiences with Mozy and Carbonite. You know, there are a few others out there. There's like Dolly Drive, which for some reason, you know, they're in the App Store. In the case recently, I had experience with them as a recommendation from Mac Practice. Dolly Drive claims to be, or I guess is, HIPAA compliant. And so, you know, they're the recommendation from Mac Practice. And so they're out there. They're more expensive. Again, like you said, you get what you pay for. So I'm not against the fact that they're more expensive, but the software just left a lot to be desired. I mean, it was very buggy. And backup software that's buggy is kind of a non-starter for me. It's like, you know, you sort of expect a higher level of quality from your, you know, software that's backing up your computer versus anything else. There's bugs in the surface level. Like, what are the bugs that are underneath that might result in your data not getting backed up?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that too, because that's been my exposure. I mean, I heard Dolly Drive when they first came out maybe 4 or 5 years ago. There was a little bit of press and buzz on them. And then I recently ran into this too, where the only company for offsite backup that Mac Practice was recommending was Dolly Drive. Mm-hmm. So I had some conversations with their tech support at Mac Practice. I know there's been ACNs and people on Slack who have really bad feelings about Mac Practice, but for me, it's been pretty smooth sailing. So I haven't had some of the horror stories that others have had. One of the conversations I had was, I said, you know, are you absolutely sure that that company's still in business? And I went to the Dolly Drive website and they had blog entries that dated back, the newest were like 2015. I'm really dubious about that company and the fact that you said if you had some recent experience with the software and it seemed a little kludgy, I couldn't in good conscience, even though like Mac Practice has their... So they were saying, one of the tech support people from Mac Practice said, well, you know, tell us, like, what do you know about them? And I said, well, I would think that you would know, that you'd be telling me that this is what I should use for my client because it is HIPAA compliant. I mean, what is your relationship with them? Well, we know the owner likes them and he's used them in the past. And I'm like, huh, okay. Thanks.
Yeah, there's some kind of kickback thing going on, I'm sure, you know, being the exclusive recommendation, you know, and whatever. There's got to be a financial incentive for them to recommend them. It just doesn't make any sense otherwise. Like, why, of all the options out there, like this one, the burden is kind of on them to tell us, like, why is this a compelling option? We're the consultants, and like, we haven't encountered this. If you look at the bottom of their page, copyright 2013, you know, it's... I don't know. It's of all the choices, like this is the one. I think because, and I don't know, maybe I'm just overly skeptical, but I said they claim to be HIPAA compliant. I mean, what makes them HIPAA compliant, and what, you know, why is Backblaze not, for example? I don't know the answer to that. But I think the fact they claim to be HIPAA compliant is probably a good reason for MacPractice to recommend them. But, you know, despite the fact that they claim to be HIPAA compliant, I'd still have a lot more questions to ask because they just don't seem...
It's very suspicious. So yeah. I stand corrected. I just went to the blog for Dolly Drive. The last entry was from April 11, 2014. And it's telling us that they're safe from the heartbeat bug.
Right. That's good to know.
So, you know, that makes me turn the other way and with my client in hand and run as fast as I can. And like, this is not for us. I don't care what they're saying.
Right.
Why should I believe that they're HIPAA compliant?
I completely agree. And if you look at their support page, the promoted article is upgrading to Mavericks. Read this first. You know,
nice.
Mavericks.
Nice.
Is Mavericks 10.8 or 10.9? I can't remember which one, but like, we're pretty far past Mavericks at this point.
It's like that nobody took down the website, but they've been out of business for several years, and MacPractice is still recommending
them. Exactly. Send all your data here. They're, you know, it'll be in good hands.
Running out of some guy's garage.
Yeah. And it's on the App Store. Like Apple, you know, it's good enough for Apple too. So I don't know. It's just, this was last updated November 21st, 2013, this Dolly Drive app on the App Store. It features a iOS 7 interface, so that's good. You have
all right,
iOS
Joey.
7. I think have we done enough here? And then I just have to finally the two customer reviews listed, 1-star reviews, horrible by Tim in Texas. Dolly Drive is worthless. If it isn't deleting your files, it simply doesn't work. Next one is bad, and you know, it's the title, and just doesn't work is the comment. So.
We'll be hearing from their attorneys at the end of the week, sure.
All right, yeah. I mean, come on. This is just public info. We're just reading off their site. Yeah, that's rough. So anyway, I don't think there really are too many other options out there that we can, you know, really recommend compared with Backblaze and CrashPlan. So now that CrashPlan's getting out of home business, I guess Backblaze is just the go-to recommendation for homes. And for me, it always was, and I guess it still will be for the foreseeable future.
So one other little public service announcement before we wind up here this afternoon is, as of September 1st, the Dropbox public folder is no more. So we've been getting warnings about this from Dropbox for a number of months now leading up to this. Basically, people were taking the public folder and they were throwing in HTML files and using it as either test websites for developers. Pretty much just a misuse of the public folder that made Dropbox finally say that, you know, they needed to abandon it. So you could still make links on any of your files throughout Dropbox. It's just that this live read-only folder that existed in your Dropbox folder is gone, or it doesn't work the way it used to. So what I was using it for was I was putting some images, and I had one of the client that I was doing this for as well. He wanted to have some graphics in his signature. And as you know, that's a real struggle on the Mac especially. And so I was using the live links coming from the Dropbox public folder for my own signature. So I ended up using AWS, Amazon Web Service, for that. And that's really easy to do. You could sign up for it. They have a little bit of a free tier that you could use for a while. And, you know, you could put either things that you need to frequently have clients download rather than using, you know, your own personal website or your own personal server space. You could just throw it up there on AWS. So it works pretty well, and it's pretty... the control panel is pretty straightforward and pretty easy to figure out. So that's just a little tip that's worked out well for me.
Nice. And how do you use that exactly on AWS? You just have to sign up for an account with them, and then you just like do it using the web interface?
Yeah. And you go to the AWS and you can create buckets. You know, that's their name for folders or data silos. Mm-hmm. You know, you just throw stuff in there. And then if you want it, you can make a read write or you can assign permissions and just make it read only. So if it's some sort of PDF that you need to provide a link to for your clients on a regular basis, it just offloads you using your Dropbox account for doing that on a one-off basis.
Yeah, it's good that there is an alternative to that. But it's one of those things, too, where when you rely on a free service to do something, there's just no expectation it's going to be there forever. You know, clients a lot of times are like appalled that this stuff goes away. And it's, you know, somebody had to pay for it. So many examples of this over the years where, you know, people are just like appalled or they've been using Gmail, you know, like a free Gmail account. And then they want to get support from Google. And it's like, who's going to pay for that support? You know, like what I don't know. It's just really funny. I went through this today with Facebook. Client got locked out of her Facebook account and they want a security check. You know, they want to basically text her a code and then, you know, confirm that it's her. And I don't know if it's like related to two-factor she got turned on somehow or if it's just like a one-time thing due to like they suspect your account was compromised or whatever. It's just not working. She's not getting the code. The phone number's correct and she's not getting the code. You know, they don't make it easy to contact them. Like you'd think that they would have support for their customers. And I said, well, they actually do have support for their customers who are actually the advertisers. You know, we're not the customers. Like, we're the product, really. And it's still surprising they don't support us because without us, without users of Facebook, you know, they would have no product. They don't really care if, like, you know, one individual can't get into Facebook. And, you know, at the end of the day, they just, you know, they have 2 billion other people that use Facebook. So they're going to move on. It's a free service. I mean, what are the, who's paying for the support for that? So people have this expectation of things being free. What, how did I get off on this rant, Jerry?
Even things that people pay for. How about the transporter product with those little pyramid-shaped devices that you plug into your network and you could do location to location. And it was originally owned by Data Robotics for a little while. Yeah, that company's completely out of business. And so people are like stuck with these little transporter drives.
Yeah, and that's a great example because there was no cost to the service, right? It was like a one-time hardware purchase. And then like you want to keep using it. Well, there's nobody to pay because they went out of business. So it's just, yeah, it's another great example of if you get something for nothing, you know, there's no guarantee it's going to be there the next time you need it. Thanks to Kalos Consulting for sponsoring this week's Command Control Power. For more information, go to kalosconsultinginc.com. That's K-A-L-O-S consulting.com. And let Kalos know that you heard about them from Command Control Power.